FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. The date is February 15th, 2016. Much going on over the weekend, in case you weren't tuned in because you were too busy with Valentine's Day like me. But John Rubino, he stayed tuned in and he's with us now. John, as always, welcome.
Hey, Kerry. Yeah, another crazy Monday. Only this time it's in the opposite direction. All the world's markets are melting up for some kind of interesting reasons. So over the weekend, it's kind of fun having Asia be such an important part of the global financial system now, because they report all this crazy stuff on like Saturday. You know, so yeah. It gives a couple of days for the U.S. and European markets to process it all. But China reported trade numbers that were so bad, almost unbelievably bad. Their exports dropped by 11% and their imports fell by 18.8%. You know, that's a sign of an economy that is contracting at an accelerating rate. But a lot of what was reported was that those two numbers combined to give China a record trade surplus. So it sounds like their trade is actually healthy based on some of the headlines, but the underlying numbers are catastrophic almost for an export-oriented economy. And then Japan's fourth quarter GDP was reported over the weekend as shrinking at an annualized rate of 1.4%, meaning that after 3 or 4 years of Abenomics, after the biggest percentage increase in money creation that we've seen in modern times, and interest rates that are now negative almost out to 10 years, Japan's economy is shrinking. They didn't get anything for all of this. And that's also a huge admission of failure. Meanwhile, Europe is contracting at the periphery, and the Italian bank loans are going bad at a record rate. You know, there's a double-digit non-performing loan ratio in the Italian bank sector, which is depression level. And so the European Central Bank announced that it would not hesitate to act. In other words, it came out with a variation on the whatever it takes Draghi announcement of a few years ago that ignited the last stage of the bull market in equities, and got basically the same effect. You know, the world's equity markets have melted up over the weekend, because now the European Central Bank is apparently going to start allowing Italian banks, for instance, to use non-performing loans as collateral for loans from the central bank. In other words, we're going to start monetizing defaulted loans now. You know, it used to be really? The central banks would buy back high-grade sovereign debt, you know, the debt of Germany or something like that, and they'd be willing to lend you money based on something like that. Well, now we're all the way down into subprime territory where a loan doesn't even have to be performing to be considered collateral with the central bank in Europe, which means taxpayers are now, in effect, bailing out the Italian banks. So these are huge admissions of failure. You know, it's clear that the last few years of experimental, incredibly expansive monetary policy have failed. And we're going to get more of the same.
Yeah.
And the markets like that. Well, meanwhile, in the Middle East,
markets can't get enough.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, the markets can't get enough freshly printed money, because that works great for the banks. And hey, we didn't even talk about Deutsche Bank, which is like sinking like a stone here. But yeah, and then the Middle East, like you were saying, what's going on with Turkey? Supposedly Saudi Arabia and Turkey are just doing a drill, war games, right?
Well, with live bombs in some places, though. But yeah, we got to hope that they're going to stop at what they did over the weekend and not go further, because they would be invading Syria on the side that's against Russia. So we would have Saudi Arabia and Turkey, who is a NATO member, and Saudi Arabia is a close ally of the U.S., killing Russians. And the Russians, of course, wouldn't stand for that. They would start killing Saudi Arabians and Turks. And the U.S. is one step away from being sucked into something like that, because we're kind of contractually obligated to defend Turkey. So let Russia push Saudi Arabia and Turkey off that theater and pursue them into Turkey. And then you've got World War III on your hands. And, you know, that's still really, really unlikely, thank God, at this point. But we're doing things that bring us large steps closer to something like a confrontation between the U.S. and Russia. And that should be terrifying to everybody.
Yeah. You know,
this is really completely unnecessary in the first place and absolutely terrifying in its implications. And the financial markets seem to be okay with that, too.
Yeah, you know, hey, and
it is funny to watch with this Pavlovian response to central banks.
You know that wars are first and foremost inflationary. So, hey, we need more inflation because we don't have enough currency and it's floating around, right? So let's get it going.
This isn't as good as an alien invasion from a Keynesian standpoint, but it's pretty good from the standpoint of blowing stuff up that we then have to replace and injuring people that we then have to support for decades. You know, that's healthcare is part of GDP. So, I can see how, from a Keynesian point of view, some good things happened over the weekend. You know, we're willing to borrow to borrow more money to finance non-performing loans, and we're invading other countries and stuff. Yeah, you know, that's all expansionary. But in the long run, see, this stuff is proving not to work. And the last month and a half or so is a good example of how the world reacts when it figures out that the stuff that the adult supervisors of the economy have been doing isn't working. So this next batch of stuff, whatever Draghi decides to do, is not going to work. And whatever the Japanese central bank does is not going to work, because they've already done pretty much the most extreme thing it's possible to do, with just a couple of exceptions. And it didn't work. So the idea of markets responding positively to this in the long run is absurd. You know, this is a short-term pop based on an ingrained reaction of traders to not fight the Fed. You know, whenever a central bank does something that's open-ended and extremely expansionary, financial markets respond well to it. But as soon as that stops, see, if it continues, it becomes out of control inflationary. But if it stops, the markets turn around, tank again. You get another month like January. So nothing is fixed, of course. You know, any listener to your show knows that none of this stuff actually fixes anything in the long run, and actually just makes the problems that much bigger. So here we go again.
Here we go again, which is the title of this segment. And yeah, I mean, if central banks were these real alchemists, John, they wouldn't be needing to do what they're doing now if what they did really worked. This is a case where the cure is clearly worse than the disease. And hey, solutions, I'm all for solutions, but there's got to be some reason behind it, a rational plan, strategy. I don't see any of this here. And if starting World War III is going to make it all better, we better really rethink everything, because wars have just proven to be counterproductive. What do you do in a war? You destroy capital and you kill people. And then, like you said, the capital's got to be replaced, which leads to the illusion of a boom like post-World War II. But really, you've depleted the capital stock of humanity. So if depopulation is the aim of these wars, so therefore the Earth's resources will be under less demand, less pressure, well, just come out and say it, all right? But I think that is part of it. I think that these progressives, when you look at things from the UN like Agenda 21 and climate change legislation, all that, the whole thing is to decrease the number of people on the planet here. And there's been lots of reports that show, to some extent, this is what they're thinking here. I don't want to get into big conspiracy theories, but if only there were 1 billion people instead of 7, planet would be so much better, right?
Yeah. Well, that is kind of one of the dominant questions of conversations within the sound money community for like the last 20 years has been, is this part of a plan put into place by really smart people with a long time frame, or is it the result of utter cluelessness with the guys in charge just blundering from one mistake to the next? And I really want to believe the second, because it's marginally less scary than the dark interpretation of Agenda 21. Mm. But I don't know, how can we know until the end which it is?
Can't know.
And hopefully these guys just don't understand what they're doing. They're, as Jim Rickard says, the people in charge are operating with flawed models. And so the inputs give bad outputs now. If you're looking at a system, a dynamic equilibrium system where you tweak it just a little bit, and it comes back into equilibrium, and then it gets slightly out of whack, and then you tweak it again, and it just goes on like that forever, which is that's their model. You adjust monetary policy very slightly at the margins, and that keeps the economy growing at 2 or 3% for as far as the eye can see. But that doesn't take into account the increase in debt that's required to get these tweaks to work in the short run. And the amount of debt that's required is going up exponentially.
Yeah.
So the system is becoming more and more unstable, and the tweaks are becoming less and less effective. And that's what we're seeing now, where the marginal productivity of debt is plunging. In other words, you take on debt, but you don't get any bang for your buck anymore. And so you have to take on immensely more debt in order to get that, 200,000 increase in jobs each month. And so the amount of money that you're paying per job goes up into hundreds of thousands and then into the millions. And then at some point, it just completely stops working. And we're heading for that. But the models that the guys in charge are using don't account for the increase in debt. And so they don't see this train wreck coming.
Yeah.
And so there's a good example of that that I posted a small article about over the weekend about how some new numbers came out about who in the U.S. economy is taking on more and less debt.
Yes.
And it turns out that the debts held by people over 50 are soaring. In other words, people who in other times were in the process of paying off debt to get ready for retirement are actually taking on more and more debt now. And the Federal Reserve that made the announcement spun it as a good thing because the default rates of older people are historically lower than the default rates of younger people.
Okay.
So that we're likely to see a plunge in default rates going forward as old people take on more and more debt because they're traditionally better at handling their debts. And of course that's absurd. And one way you understand that it's absurd, one way you can determine that is to look at past announcements by the so-called experts about default rates. And what happens usually, historically, is that when the experts start extolling the low default rates of a given sector, that's a sign that sector is about to blow up. And that happens over and over again with junk bonds. Right at the peak of a credit bubble, defaults are really low because almost anybody, no matter how crappy, can get refinancing. And so they don't have to default. They can just go to another bank or to the bond market and get more money. And then they pay off their old loans with new higher interest loans and keep the game going for a while. But then when things slow down, that new financing dries up and you see a huge spike in default rates. And so we're heading for that again with junk bonds, obviously. But you can apply that same logic to basically any other sector. In good times, the experts always say, we've got such a low default rate here that this is fine. We don't see any problems on the horizon. And I found an article from, where was it from? Let's see, a Barron's, where they were quoting some experts on the junk bond market in 2014, saying that because the Fed's policy was so expansionist that junk bond borrowers would be able to get new financing for longer than usual. And so this time the cycle was going to go on for a really long time, and the junk bonds would remain nice, safe, high-yielding investments. Sure. For years and years. And that was 2014, 1 year before the junk bond market absolutely imploded, as it has been doing lately and as it will do in 2016.
Yeah.
So this kind of illustrates the flawed model that most economic commentators are working with. And it explains why they're so wrong at turning points, because they're not looking at debt.
They're just extrapolating.
Just extrapolating from the last couple of years.
If it's good now, it's going to be even better. And if you're extrapolating when things are going up, but they never extrapolate when things are going down. then everything's going to turn around. And hey, hopefully they're right, but usually they're wrong. On that note, John, we got to go, but find John's work over at dollarcollapse.com. Don't forget his podcast. You'll find a link on financialsurvivalnetwork.com to it. Podcast. More and more of you listening, close to 10,000 people tuned in one day last week, John, if you can believe it.
Cool. That's a promising start, huh, Gary?
Yeah. Hey, I'm impressed. I started out with 10 listeners, so 10,000, I'm impressed. And John, we will talk to you next week. Be well.
Thanks, Gary. See ya.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.